Okay, talking about encouragement, and Steve, you're on deck for next week. Okay, good, thumbs up, we're on the same page, that's comforting. Thank you, sir. Encouraging. It's encouraging, that encourages me. So you'll have Steve next week, and then that following week was going to be me, but I think we're having the preacher student. So it'll be 3 weeks anyway before you see me again. So a little reprieve. So we're going to try to get through some material today. Last week, we finished up, just spent a few minutes on Naaman, finished that up, jumped into Moses, talked about Moses' conversation with who?
God.
With God. All right, and what were they talking about? What did God want him to do?
Speak and lead.
Lead what? What was he wanting them to go do?
Lead his people out of Egypt.
Lead them out of Egypt, right? And Moses jumped on that, right? He said, all right, you know. Here I am, send me, Lord. Right? Was he the one that said that? No. So what were some of his comments there in Exodus 4?
He couldn't speak well.
Can't speak well. All right. And what did God say to that one?
Didn't send Aaron. He gave him the words to say.
Yeah, he said, I can't speak well. And he's like, well, you know, who made your tongue? All right? He's like, I kind of know your capability here. And he said, I'm going to give you a sign. And he told him to throw his rod down, and he did, and turned into a snake. And he said, grab it by the tail, which I thought was kind of God versus grab it by the head. So he grabbed it by the tail, turned back into a rod. Did the whole leprosy thing, right? Put your hand in, and it's clean, put it in, comes out, it's back, pull out, it's clean again. He's like, listen, they're going to believe you, okay, or they should believe you. These are signs. So he got through all of that. Then he got to the speech, well, I can't speak well, and God started getting upset with him a little bit, okay? And he said, well, we'll use your brother Aaron, all right? We'll use your brother Aaron, and I will tell you, and you can tell him, and I'll be with both of you. All right, God was hanging in there with him, even though he got frustrated with him and a little angered at him. He didn't leave them. He met them where they were, right, and said, I'll do this for you, and I'll do that for you, and I'll be with you, and then I'll be with him, and we'll be with both of you, and work out, right? And we know, so Moses did, finally, he went and did all the things he needed to do there, and they went through all the plagues, and they went through, you know, death of the firstborn. And then we flipped over to Exodus 14, all right? Exodus 14. And starting at verses 10 through 18, we read 10 through 18. I'm not going to reread it now, but you can kind of start to scan. I'll talk about it. And this is where Pharaoh let the people go, and then he decided, nah, I don't like this, and I'm going to send my people, my armies back after them to bring them back. Right? And then in verse 11, we saw this is where the people, they said to Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us out away to die in the wilderness? Like, is that why you brought us out here to die? It's because they didn't have graves back there to put us in? Why have you dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Verse 12, is this not the word that we told you in Egypt? Did we not tell you so? Was this the big, this is the big I told you so moment to Moses? Right? Did we not tell you in Egypt, saying, let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than we should die in the wilderness. All right? When you're trying to help people do the right thing, it's amazing sometimes how resistant we can be. Right? We hang on to even stuff that is not good for us. I mean, clearly not good for us. Like, should you walk with God and the path is uncertain and you don't know how it's going to work out, but you know you're walking with God versus you're going to walk with those who mistreat you and who enslave you? And it just shows how familiarity, how we are creatures of comfort or habit, even more than comfort. There is comfort in familiarity. And being familiar with things that aren't good for us aren't good for us. And it takes courage to make a change. It takes courage to walk away from everything you know and go follow some man, right? It does take courage, and they are losing courage. And so in verse 13, Moses said to the people, what? It's the first thing he tells them.
Do not fear.
Do not fear. Don't be afraid. Right? Don't be afraid. I'll tell you, fear is one of our biggest challenges as human beings. And sometimes we think of fear like I'm afraid or something's attacking me. There is that type of fear, but it's fear of failure. It's fear of not being good enough, right? Self-esteem types of things. It's fear of being rejected. And it causes us to do stuff that's not good for us, the things that aren't healthy. And here they're afraid to try something different, but he tries to create a vision for them. He tries to paint the picture and say, stand still, slow down, slow your mind down, just think for a moment, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you, what, when, in 20 years?
Today.
Just be patient enough for today. Take a risk for today. I'm not even asking you to wait till tomorrow. Just hang on for today, and you will see the salvation of God. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more forever. The Lord will fight for you, verse 14, and you shall hold your peace. All right, and that's where we left off. And then in verse 15, it says, now, all of this is happening, and what must Moses be thinking? I mean, these people, I mean, he has no idea what he's in for going forward. I mean, this is just the tip of the iceberg, right? I mean, this is the foreshadow of the next 40 years here.
Is it notable that he was the one talking to the children? You know, it says Moses said to the children, not he relayed through Aaron, kind of when the rubber hits the road, maybe his encouragement from God was heeded, and you know, he was strengthened, and when he needed to speak up, he spoke up.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I thought last week, too, when we were talking about the whole Aaron-Moses thing, I said, he could have just fixed whatever. He could have helped. He could have healed. He could have changed Moses' ability, just how he speaks, right? God could change his brain chemistry or his whatever his issue was where he was slow to speech. God could just have fixed it, right? But he didn't. He let Aaron go. My guess is Moses was the one that was still speaking a lot. Aaron did speak. Moses did too. He probably also grew in confidence over time, right? I mean, he's put in these positions. He can just sit there and say, no, hey, where's Aaron? I doubt Aaron was glued to his hip 24/7, and Moses could, figure out too, that probably wasn't really the best excuse. you know, he was looking for all kinds of excuses. And while I'm sure he had an issue at some level, I doubt it was prevented him from communicating, right? So, but it's interesting. It infers here that Moses is going back to God saying, God, you know, look at these people. I mean, I'm doing my best. I'm telling them not to be afraid. Verse 15, the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? So Moses is crying, whatever that means, complaining, concerned, you know, back to God. Tell the children of Israel to go forward. Right. So you look at all of, don't lose the chain here of encouragement. You've got God who's encouraging Moses. So even Moses, even though he's the leader and he's standing up and saying, this day you'll see the salvation of the Lord and the Lord is going to take care of you and the Lord, then he turns around to God like, you know, please, you know, this is a mess and this is God supporting him and he's supporting the people. Right? And if any of those break down, now the one that you can always trust on is you can always trust on God to be the encourager, to God to be the support. It's just that, but let's know that sometimes we are that intermediate person between God and someone else. Not that they can't go to him directly, but sometimes we are the ones with the relationship. We are the ones in the position to encourage, and God supports us to do the right thing for them. But he says, verse 16, but lift up your rod and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it, and the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea. And I indeed will harden the hearts of the Egyptians, and they shall follow them, so that I will gain honor over Pharaoh and over all of his army, his chariots and his horsemen. Then the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I have gained honor for myself over Pharaoh, his chariots and his horsemen. All right, and then an angel comes, and we're not going to go through the rest of this. The point that I wanted to make here, and just wrapping this one up before we start today's, is what if Moses, you know, hadn't encouraged the people? What if Moses was not able to get them to stand still and just to be patient and to wait? And think about when Moses turns around and he lifts his rod and the sea parts. You just think about that for a minute. Right? This guy tells you God's going to deliver you this day. And he turns around and the sea parts. I mean, that has to just be unbelievably impressive. And that would encourage, right? I mean, if that's not a sign, and it's dry land, it's not like you're walking through, you know, that you need your boots. Sandals encouraged, okay? Sandals are just fine here. Might even be dusty. And you're going to walk across dry land. And then not even to see that, but as they go and they get to the other side and everyone's coming in, I mean, what do they see? You know, you go on to read, I mean, as the water comes back and it kills them, it drowns them, and all of those bodies and horses and everything, I mean, wash up on the shore. Right. So, millions of people, because Moses was willing to do what he needed to do and that he was encouraged by God to do the right things. All right. Today I want to move into encouraging the sinner. So Naaman wasn't a sinner in the sense of, I mean, he had a problem. He had leprosy and people needed to come up to him and whisper in his ear and say, really, my friend? I mean, come on. You know, go do the right thing. And that helped him physically. That's great. And children of Israel weren't sinners for being in Egypt. They were held captive, and this was just trying to get them out. But what about encouraging someone who's sinned or who you think is about to do something that's not so great? This gets a little more difficult. Why might that be more challenging?
Because it's a choice.
Because people are making choices. Okay.
And they don't want to listen when you try to tell them what's right and what's wrong. They don't want to hear that.
Okay. Anything else? Let's look at Genesis 4. Could someone read Genesis 4, 1 through 8? Genesis chapter 4, verses 1 through 8.
And Adam knew Eve's wife, and she conceived and bare Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord. And she bare again his brother Abel. And Abel was a keeper of the sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord. And Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering. But unto Cain and his offering he had no respect. And Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. And the Lord said unto Cain, why are you angry? And why is your countenance fallen? If you do not well, shalt thou not be accepted? And if you do not well, sin lies at the door. And unto thee shall be his desire, and thou shalt rule over him. And Cain talked with Abel, his brother. And it came to pass, when they were in the field, that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and slew him.
All right, thanks. All right, so most of us are familiar with this account. All right, so Adam and Eve, they're out of the garden. They have these two boys, Cain and Abel. All right, and what did Abel do? What was his profession, if you will?
Shepherd.
Okay, a shepherd. Abel, yeah. And then Cain was like a farmer, right? He was a tiller of the ground. All right, so they do different things. And it came to pass, verse 3, that they did an offering to the Lord, and Abel brought of the firstborn of his flock. And how did the Lord feel about that? Pretty good, right? He was satisfied. But verse 5, what about Cain? He didn't respect Cain's offering. And what was Cain's response?
He grew bitter and angry.
Okay, so he was angry. Remember, I said anger, frustration, all those things are rooted in what? What's the root cause for when people are
fear?
When they're angry, when they get frustrated, when they get you just pay attention to that and see if that's not true. That if it's not rooted in fear, what might Cain fear here? What would he be fearing? Potentially. Think if you're Cain and you go up with your brother and you both make an offering to God, and
his is acceptable,
and to God your sacrifice isn't acceptable.
Jealousy? Failure?
Could be jealousy, could be failure. I failed. I don't want to fail.
Rejection?
I'm rejected by God. Is that not fearful? I mean, is that not something to be like, what does this mean?
There's also a sense of pride that comes when you're upset that, you know, you aren't good enough.
That I'm not good enough. Right? Maybe, why am I not good enough? Why is mine not good? And that he's better than I am, right? So, jealousy that way. There's all kinds of things here that can set people off. That gets angry. So then that moves you into a fight or flight kind of a thing. And he doesn't reflect and pull back and reflect, he gets angry, right? He's going to fight. And even God, because I am good enough. Right? He wants to prove that he is good enough, or I am as good as my brother. Because maybe he's afraid I'm not. So just pay attention that whenever you feel angry or you feel really frustrated or really, just stop and say, what am I fearing? Do I really need to fear this? Is this really true? Or and that's the same too, even when someone comes to you with advice and you get angry, if you're sinning or doing something that's not right, what do you fear? You fear that I don't want to be told I'm not right, right? I fear I might have to change. I fear that my thinking might be flawed, right? Am I not? It's a whole lot of things that we fear that then we have to make that decision. Are we going to fight it? Or are we going to
step back and reflect and think
about it? But here,
Brother, not because they something of course. Comes to mind. Couldn't it be that the root of the problem is that you are prideful?
That you are what?
You are prideful.
Oh, of course.
P-R-I-D-E.
Of course.
Yeah, that's what comes to my mind.
Of course.
God resists the proud, but give grace to the humble.
Pride without question, but the thing about pride is that when you're full of pride, you're already in the mindset that I'm right or that I'm better, and we hang on to that. The only time that the prideful
people aren't inherently angry, they're only get angry when they get challenged, and they have to consider maybe I'm wrong, right? And then they fear that, oh, how
can you challenge me?
Yeah.
Right? Because they're so full of pride, they can't see the truth. And so pride is definitely a key piece of it here. But look at the Lord. So, verse 6, what happens? The very first part. Let's not overlook this.
Yes, Cain, why?
Who asked Cain why?
The Lord.
Which implies that he noticed and he did something. Remember, we talked about we have to decide if we want to get involved or not in people's stuff. Did God have to say anything to Cain? So,
they do a sacrifice.
God likes Abel's. This one really didn't displease me. I mean, this one didn't really please me. I mean, he's God. What?
What more does God have to do? He doesn't have to do anything else.
Yes, he does. He's God. He says, "I can't stand you in your sin, and I want you to change. So I have to tell you and give you a chance to change."
Okay.
That's his nature. He says, "I just can't stand here and loving you and letting you go away without being challenged."
You're right. You're right in that sense as far as the nature of God. But God doesn't go and talk to every person he doesn't do right through the Old Testament or even into the New Testament, right? I mean, he doesn't take that extra action. The assumption that I have is that God has told them, or they knew, Cain knew what was acceptable. I don't think that God surprised him. And he didn't fully do what God wanted him to do. So he has to decide, maybe next time, do I come back and do what God wants me to do, or do I not? So God gets involved, and he says to him what?
Why?
Why are you angry? And why has your countenance fallen? So Doug's point, too, I mean, I think, you know, God is he is a caring God. I mean, I don't think he's just trying to, he's not trying to rub it in here. He's just going to him and he says, why are you so angry? Why are you so down on yourself? Because he tells him in verse 7, what? If you do well, what?
You'll be accepted.
Right? It's like, it's all right. I mean, yeah, you didn't do well. But if you do well, God's telling him there's a path here. There's a path. You don't have to be so upset. This did not work out. I'm sorry. You didn't do what I wanted you to do. But if you do well, I will accept you. I mean, God has reached out to him to encourage him, to say, I will accept you. This isn't someone else saying, or Abel, his brother, coming to him and said, hey, if you do what's right, God will accept you. Or Adam or Eve coming up to him and saying, hey, if you do what's right, God will accept. This is God himself intervenes and says, why are you angry? Why is your countenance fallen? If you do well, you will be accepted. You're just as good as your brother. That's right. And God's trying to open his eyes. And God also tells him the opposite. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I like this version better. The English Standard Version says, when he said the opposite, it says, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is contrary to you, but you must rule over it. I mean, and that's like a daily thing. I mean, you know, God wants to help us. And he wants to accept us. But it's our choice as to whether or not we like go down the path of sin and allow the snares to entangle us.
That's right, because he does. He says, if you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and it has a desire for you. It is right there, my friend. I can see it. I know how this thing can play out. When you're this angry, I'm telling you, you just do the right thing, you'll be accepted. But if you don't get your head around this, this thing is knocking on your door. And it is looking for you. Right? But you need to rule over it.
Well, and this is so critical as human beings. This is what really life comes down to. And I think what makes it so hard is this is really a battle within our own selves. It's not some external thing that's happening outside of us. But like Paul says in Romans 7, this is a critical chapter, I think, in this discussion, is we have within ourselves two minds at war, and that's the spiritual mind and the fleshly mind. And it's really something that every day there's a war we go into, and it's hard. And we've got to continue to try to choose God. And Satan knows it's a long battle, so he's going to try to wear us down over time.
Yeah. When we go down to Florida, occasionally congregation, we go there, there's a preacher often says, you know, every day, to your point, you're deciding you either crucify Christ or you crucify self. So every one of these things, you're either going to crucify Christ again. You know, we say, well, I didn't crucify Christ. Well, you're either going to crucify Christ or you're going to crucify self. And to your point, I mean, that's kind of going back and forth here. And so we know what happens. He goes out of the field and he kills his brother. He rises up and kills his brother. So God failed. God failed. No, he didn't fail. Okay? So when we encourage people and we try to help people do the right thing and they don't, what does that mean for you?
You didn't fail. You did what you're supposed to.
You did your part. Right? We are to encourage We are to support. We are to sometimes have the tough conversation. We are to try to support someone and help them see. Sometimes they can hear from you. Sometimes they can't hear from you. I mean, this is even God himself reaching out and saying, I will accept you. I will accept you. Right? If you do well, but be careful because you're in a bad place. He didn't listen and he fell into that bad place and he made his situation worse. Right? By killing his brother.
And isn't it amazing that he didn't go in the field and curse him out?
No.
That would have been wrong, right?
Yeah.
He didn't go in the field and beat him up. He went to the step of killing him. Right? And what's this really telling us is that if we are allowed to go to our extremes in our self-seeking flesh, it's just really how far we'll go. You know, those would have been sinful, going to say bad words to him, beat him up, but he didn't go there. He eliminated it.
Yeah. All right, so that's Cain with God. So even God as an encourager, God stepped in. God stepped in and had a conversation with him, and he still went and didn't do the right thing. So you're not always going to be successful when we encourage. We're just here to encourage. We're here to try to help people see. And, you know, and then it's not, we are responsible though for how we do it. And we will be held accountable for how we do it. Right? Encouragement is encouragement. It's to help someone get there. Sometimes that is a stiff word and some support, but you know, we need to be thoughtful about how we go. We will be held accountable for how we go and we talk to people.
It needs to come from a place of love, not judgment.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't hear what
she said. It needs to come from a place of love, not judgment.
Exactly. I was listening to a sermon over the weekend. During the week, and the brother brought up chapter 33 of Ezekiel. And I think this goes perfectly in line with us being responsible for our brothers and sisters, because we are, and not just our brothers and sisters, but the unsaved, we are their watchmen. And if we don't encourage our brothers and sisters and share the gospel, their blood will be at our hand. You know, in Ezekiel, I thought that was wow. So we have to. It's not, we are commanded to encourage one another. We are commanded to go out and share the gospel. And if we don't, their blood will be at our hand according to what we read in Ezekiel, the 33rd chapter.
Yeah. God has expectations of us, for sure.
There's got to be tough skin that people do like Cain did, right? God, even God, encouraged him. He didn't bitch it. He became a murderer instead.
Yeah.
Some people turn off on us. They may get angry with us and all that stuff. Maybe if you're confronting them with something they don't necessarily want to look at, probably, and go at them. But you've got to be tough skin. You can't let that say you're bad. You're still good and still work with them. But then, even this, I guess if Cain had murdered his brother, you go back, I still have a responsibility to pray for him. I can pray for him, then I can listen to him. You know? And they may get irritated with that too. Hey, that's where the real power is God interacting with them and God changing their heart. So even when somebody turns us off and don't want to listen, I would say they have to stay on the prayer list and still work with them. When an opportunity comes up, you
yeah. Turn over to Luke 22. We're just going to read two verses here. And then I want to try to get... Oh, you got to be kidding me. Okay, that is not going to work. Luke 22. Luke 22, verse 31. Someone read 31 and 32.
And the Lord said, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for thee, that thy faith fail not, and when thou art converted, strengthened by thy brethren.
All right, so what's the setting here? What's going on in the context here?
The apostles, they're talking about their place in the kingdom or in the...
Well, they're in the upper room, okay? Had the Lord's Supper, if you want to call it. They had Passover, okay? So they were having the Passover, and it talked about, this is when Jesus was telling them, what was going to happen. And Jesus gets to a place here where he talks about and lets Peter know that, lets Peter know what in verse 31? Satan's ass for him. Okay. Is this not kind of similar to the whole Cain situation? I mean, what did God tell Cain? Sin is, it desires you, right? It is knocking on your door. And he tells Peter that. And he says, indeed, Satan has asked for you that he might sift you as wheat. Yeah. Every time I read that, it's just horrifying to me, right? That Satan has picked some person and has asked God that I want to break them down to their smallest pieces. I mean, I want to break this person.
Isn't that what he was doing with Job?
Absolutely. I mean, just
basically the same request he had for
Job. I want to break him down. I mean, when you think about wheat, when you're sifting wheat, you sift it because there's clumps. There's part of it that holds together. And you get that sifter, and that sifter just powderizes it, right? I mean, it just breaks it up to where there's nothing, no pieces are stuck together. Like nothing that you have is holding together. And he goes, he has asked for you. I mean, this is Jesus looking at him saying, he has asked for you that he might sift you as wheat. That ought to be pretty sobering, in that moment. I'm not saying that it wasn't for Peter. But then, more importantly, what does Jesus say in verse 32?
I pray for you.
Right? Does he say, I will pray for you? He's already been praying for Peter. I mean, Satan has already asked. I mean, this is something that's already happened, and Jesus has already been praying for him. But what does he pray? What's he praying for?
That your faith will not fail.
That your faith won't fail. Does he pray that you will have no hardships?
No.
He's not going to take the challenge away. Does he even pray that you won't be brokenhearted? That you'll come out of it on the other side. Right? Of course, Peter's reaction is what? We did read it.
I'm ready to die with you.
So there's a little bit of this pride stuff coming back, right? I'm strong enough, Lord. Satan doesn't know who he's dealing with. Okay? I got this. Hold my Pepsi. Okay? Kind of a thing. And
we don't have God come to us directly like he did to Cain, and we're not walking around
with Jesus like they did in the first century. But when there's warnings in the New Testament, when we have brothers and sisters who come to us, God works through the family, he works through us, he puts people in our lives. We need to slow down. We need to really consider, what are they trying to tell us? Right? And we have to be willing to be those people. We have to be willing to encourage people and say, and sometimes It's, I have been on that path. All right, so getting back to a point you made, Tori, a couple weeks ago, between all of us that are sitting in here, we've either had done to us or we have done to others, we have experience in some pretty brutal things. Okay? I mean, probably to a person. And there is wisdom in what this world can do and how it can sift us and how it can sift each of us. And do we not want our brothers and sisters to be able to avoid that pain? Right? That either somebody did to us or that we've done to someone else or that they've done to themselves. Right? So, of course, we know how this ends, and so again, here, you know, Jesus does his best. He tells the truth. He prays. As Doug said, you know, for Peter. And Peter's pride doesn't help him out. And he goes off and, you know, he does what humans do. And, you know, he breaks his own heart when the Lord looks at him. When we look over in verse 62, there as well. But we have to... We know that later, which I wasn't planning to get into, saved by the bell. We know that later, Peter does get encouraged again by Christ. You know, when Christ, after he rises and goes and he talks to Peter, and we're going to talk about that more. We will have, Lord willing, in 3 weeks. It was. We're going to look at John 8, and we're going to look at the woman who was thrown in front of Christ and his encouragement to her as well. So thanks for your participation this morning.